Well, good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening Dr. Douglas Rocky. If I should say, well, he is a doctor. He's also a major and retired from the military. And we're going to be talking about depleted uranium. Now, a lot of people say depleted uranium. Why worry about depleted uranium? After all, if it's depleted, it can't have very much of an effect. And that is not going to affect me. Well, let's see how the story unfolds. Major Rocky, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you very much, sir.
Well, let's get into the background. Why don't we tell the listeners who you are, why you speak on this issue, what your qualifications are?
Well, I just retired out of the military as a major. When I enlisted originally in 1967, Vietnam, Gulf War I, and numerous problems in between, and went through all the enlisted ranks and then went through the officer ranks. My last assignment was as a U.S. Army health physicist. During Gulf War I, I was part of the 3rd U.S. Army's Medical Command's Nuclear, Biological, Chemical Warfare Special Operations Team. With the completion of the ground war, I was specifically assigned by General Norman Schwarzkopf to clean up the depleted uranium mess that we left following the use of uranium munitions, primarily U.S. casualties, friendly fire during Gulf War I. And then in 1994 and 95, I was recalled to active duty again by directive of the Secretary of the Army as a depleted uranium project director. So basically, I got the task to clean up the depleted uranium contamination from Gulf War I and then figure out how do we prevent and deal with it in the future.
All right, fine. So, obviously, you have a lot of experience with this. Now, would you explain to our listeners what depleted uranium is? Depleted uranium sort of sounds like, well, they took all the uranium out of there, so there's not much to worry about. What is depleted uranium?
Yeah, isn't it neat the way they do a play on words? Depleted uranium is actually the radioactive isotope uranium-238. That is left over after we remove the fissionable isotopes to make reactor fuel and nuclear bombs. If you have pure uranium, solid uranium, you have 3 isotopes. For every 100 pounds that you have 99.2 pounds uranium-238, 0.7 pounds of uranium-235. That's the one they use for bombs and reactor fuel. And then about 0.1 pounds uranium-234, which also can go into bombs and reactor fuel. After the enrichment process, what we do is we remove the 0.6 pounds of uranium-235 and a little bit of 234, and what they have left is called depleted uranium.
All right, but how much of the 234 and 235 are still left in the, with the 238?
About 0.2 pounds for every 100 pounds, but again, we only had about 0.8 pounds to begin with.
All right, fine. So, now,
so it's primarily uranium-238. We know that it's also contaminated with plutonium, neptunium, americium, and uranium-236, and then stuff that's just literally coming out from the Department of Energy an hour ago is they're finding now beryllium contamination also.
All right. We can talk maybe a little bit about the danger of beryllium later on. Now, why does the military want to use depleted uranium in their shells and their bombs, in missiles, things of this sort? In other words, what is the advantage from the military point of view of using depleted uranium, other than the fact it's a good way to get rid of it?
Well, yeah, we're getting rid of our radioactive waste, but the primary thing, it's an extremely effective weapon. Uranium munitions are basically solid rods of uranium. They fire at extremely high velocity. They have a very small diameter, tremendous energy, and they just punch right through and destroy everything that they're shot at. whether it be a tank, a car, a truck, an airplane, or whether it be a building or a bunker or whatever you're shooting at. The purpose of the military is to kill and destroy. Uranium rounds are the ultimate weapon that you can put into an A-10 Warthog aircraft, into an Abrams tank or a Bradley fighting vehicle, or even just into a good old 50 caliber machine gun. They're fantastic. I mean, from a killing and destroying point of view, they're the absolute best thing.
And I think, of course, our listeners have to understand that the purpose of the military is not to be nice. The purpose of the military is to kill people, destroy things, and that's the way that you win wars, as General Sherman had said so well. War is hell. But in the final analysis, of course, the military is doing just exactly what it should do, and the last thing we'd want to do would be to use this superior weapon, superior to anything else. Why is, say, uranium bullet better than a steel bullet?
Well, the density is extremely high density. It's about 1.5 to 1.7 times as heavy as lead. So for the same volume, you have a lot more material, a lot more weight or mass. The other thing, too, is pyrophoric, which means that it catches fire immediately, so it's burning. And then the last thing that makes it so effective is it's easy to form and easy to shape. So you can make it in anything you need real fast. It's just the absolute weapon. You're taking a giant uranium dart. The Abrams tank fires a uranium dart that's 3/4 inch in diameter, 18 inches long. Each and every round is over 10 pounds of solid uranium. The kinetic energy from physics is phenomenal. This destroys everything. And as it hits anything, it breaks up, catches fire, and you get a firestorm of burning uranium that causes catastrophic secondary explosions and fires.
Now, of course, when it hits a tank, then, an enemy tank, what happens?
About 40% of it breaks up into what we call spalling, fine dust and oxides that can be inhaled, ingested, that can get into a wound, that absolutely will pour the U.S. Army's own soldier's manual common task, contaminate food and water, make it unusable.
All right, so the significant thing about the depleted uranium, it really isn't depleted. In fact, most of it's uranium-238, and this dust that is created then gets into everything. It gets into the tank, it gets into the ground, it gets into the individual. Let's talk about what this does to the individual. Let's imagine that somebody comes in contact with the dust, uranium oxide dust, and inhales this uranium-238. What does it do to them?
Well, I can tell you what happened to myself and my team.
Go right ahead.
What happened to us right away is first thing we started was having respiratory problems, breathing problems. You like getting the fine particulate dust into your body, and on a dirty day, dusty day on the field, you can't breathe.
Now, you were wearing protective. Of course, you anticipated problems, so you were wearing protective gear.
Absolutely, and the particulates are the size that go right through the respiratory protection. So the gas masks that the U.S. military has issued to their troops are virtually useless, not only for this, for all the other toxic industrial chemicals released during combat.
All right.
And the next thing that happened is we developed rashes that have never gone away. The cancers in our team developed. First cancers were throat cancers within 9 months, the lung cancers within 2 years, kidney problems, eye problems, neurological problems, and they continue to this day.
Now, how many men were there in your unit?
Well, we had primarily, and it depends on how you do it, we had about 300 and some odd people that were absolutely totally involved in the cleanup and the recovery and the movement of the destroyed U.S. equipment. And then we had probably 100 people that were actively involved at the site where I was. And pretty much everybody is sick. And to this date, as of the last few weeks, I'm still unable to get medical care, the required medical care for our nation's sons and daughters that were involved in that cleanup in 1991. That's what now, 13 years ago?
Well, of course, the Army doesn't want to admit that there's a problem because then they might, of course, be in a position where they would have to relinquish this lethal weapon, as it were.
Well, that's exactly the directive that I got called the Los Alamos Memorandum that I received in March of 1991. They fully acknowledged the problem, were very clear, and stated that when we prepared our reports or wrote up what we saw, that we should lie in order to sustain the use of uranium munitions. At the same time the Los Alamos Memorandum or directive came to lie, I received another one from the Defense Nuclear Agency that's very specifically stated this is not only a health threat, it's a serious health threat. And then in 1992, even the United States Senate and the Assistant Secretary of the Army, Walker, directed the Director of the United States Army Environmental Policy Institute, and that institute then was co-located with the University of Illinois and the U.S. Army's main lab at the University of Illinois, and they said very specifically, figure out ways to reduce the toxicity of uranium emissions. Obviously, we can't do that, and that was the conclusion in the report that was issued back to the United States Senate and the Secretary of the Army.
Now, you actually prepared a report. Was your report the basis of the report that was given to the Secretary of the Army, or what?
Well, I prepared numerous reports going back to Gulf War I on all this stuff and received a lot of commendations and medals and recognition all the way up. So, yes, I was a part of those, but the main report from the AEPI was done by a whole group of senior Army scientists and engineers in positions. And then after that, when I went back on active duty as the director of the Depleted Uranium Project, I prepared today what are the environmental cleanup and remediation procedures and all the training and education that's supposed to be provided to all of our soldiers, our sons and daughters that serve our nation, that may come in contact with uranium munitions, but it was also adopted by all NATO countries.
But, of course, was anything ever done with it? In other words, you prepared a beautiful report, but were any of the precautions that you suggested, the treatments you suggested, the other things implemented?
Absolutely not. As we speak, the Deputy Secretary of Defense and the Commander of Central Command absolutely refused to provide medical care to all DU casualties. I think it's important to understand that the written directives requiring medical care within 24 hours for anybody that was within a vehicle, building, or structure hit by DU that works in a contaminated area or is downwind of any contamination is absolute. Those directives for medical care go back to when I issued the first directive, right, completion of the ground war, when the theater medical commander issued in June of 91. And then even General Eric Shinseki himself, who just retired as Chief of Staff of the Army and led these last three wars, issued the directive himself in August of 1993. So the medical directives exist. They've been absolutely willfully just either denied or delayed or not given it to it. As the United States General Accounting Office investigators just said, as of right now, they're giving medical care to about 70 people. The General Accounting Office report stated in the year 2000 that they were given medical care to 51. Well, there's thousands upon thousands that have never received the medical care. And right now in Iraq, that includes not only U.S. and coalition soldiers, but Iraqi soldiers, but more important, it includes the children, not only of Iraq, but Okinawa, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Concord, Massachusetts, where our nation was born, Indiana, Okinawa, and throughout the world.
Now, Indiana and Concord, is this because of the weapons production in those areas? Or why is there contamination there?
Concord, Massachusetts is a StarMet production facility, and the cancer rates in the surrounding neighborhoods are absolutely astronomical. In Newport, over in Indiana at the Jefferson Proving Grounds, this is where they did the testing on it. Now, there were just congressional hearings on it this last Monday on this, but again, the U.S. Army, because it's so dangerous and hazardous, asked the Nuclear Regulatory Commission last summer to absolve them of any responsibility for cleanup because it's too dangerous to go in there. This all the hazards and the risk and everything can be verified, and you get firsthand information from the casualties by referring to a book called Discounted Casualties. That book was written by a Japanese investigative reporter who is probably one of the foremost investigators of, you know, atomic and weapons stuff from Hiroshima, and that's Akira Tashiro, A-K-I-R-A, Tashiro, T-A-S-H-I-R-O. That book is available online. It's called Discounted Casualties. It's astonishing.
All right. Now, in the Indiana area, was this an area where they were, you know, using the depleted uranium shells to see how they worked? Was that how they contaminated the area?
Absolutely correct. It's the same thing as what they did up at Kings Mountain where, you know, Governor Dean was running for president and they refused to clean that up.
But, of course, the thing is that this is what we're doing to Baghdad and to all of the cities over there. They have this same sort of contamination the Army says is so dangerous that they won't send anybody into that area, and yet we're sending our troops. The Iranians, Iraqis are living there. The Iraqi civilians are living there.
Well, absolutely. We have direct photographic evidence, both video and photographs, plus the direct measurements that United States congressional staff have gone over, and scientists from other nations and from the U.S., absolutely videoing, absolutely confirming the residential neighborhoods and apartment buildings and everything are shot up with uranium munitions. It's left laying all over. U.S. Army soldiers on film stating, oh, this stuff is all over the place. We just don't bother with it.
Well, now tell me, will this be picked up with a Geiger counter, or is this a different type of radiation than we're used to?
Well, the emissions that come from it are alpha, betas, and gammas, primarily an alpha emission, but then we also have the betas and gammas from the daughter products from uranium-235 and the other isotopes in there. A standard Geiger counter and a standard technique will not find it.
All right, fine. So then how is it that it attacks the individual? How is it that it affects the human body?
Well, what happens is once you get the uranium dust, uranium oxide, uranium shrapnel in your body, you have the alpha particle that actually tears up the individual cells. You've got to remember, radiation is not good for the body, especially at the levels what we see from uranium emissions. The other thing, too, is you have the chemical toxicity. So this would be like taking a whole bunch of lead paint dust, okay, and eating it or breathing it in.
In other words, it's a heavy metal. Lead is a heavy metal, and uranium is even a heavier metal.
Well, yeah, uranium is even a heavier metal. The toxicity is greater, but it also has the radioactive components. The other thing that we see is because the particulates that are formed during a detonation and explosion, when the uranium round hits and causes this mass catastrophic explosion, are so fine that it goes through all known gas mask filters. And even though it can be a solid particulate, the scientists that I've talked to that go back to the Manhattan Project that are senior gods in this field, you know, for the last, 70, 50 years, the particulates are so small that what they tell me and what I now understand is they act like a solid, and they literally are smaller than the inner diameter of the red blood cell. So they're deposited all over the body, and then the ionizing radiation tears up the cells and causes all kinds of damage. And so we're seeing all types of health effects, not only from the uranium contamination, but we need to understand all of the contaminants of war, whether it be the contaminants from conventional munitions, which are nitrates, sulfites, and heavy metals, and then all the hazardous materials that we blew up and released when we blew up these areas, you know, industry, agriculture, medicine, and educational facilities. So you've got a toxic wasteland. That's the reason why today the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs has acknowledged over a quarter of a million, over 250,000 of Gulf War I veterans that served in the region between August of 1990 and May of 2002 are now permanently disabled.
Well, now, there are a lot more than the 250,000.
Oh, there. Absolutely.
They just haven't got around to their claims.
They haven't got around to their claims, and the problem has the soldiers can't get it put in because what has been absolutely verified during congressional investigations, United States General Accounting Office investigations, and in my own first-hand experience, is the soldiers, the military records, have disappeared at the National Records Center in St. Louis, Missouri.
Now, we sent over about, 695,000 troops to the Gulf there? Is that about right?
That's correct. That is during Gulf War I proper, August through October, November, 1990-1991.
And the government will admit that a third of those are permanently ill, or over a third of them. But some people say that there's another third that are ill and they just can't get their claims heard. Would that be an exaggeration or about right?
Probably correct, because they're just the sheer numbers that are still trying to get it. It's hard to say. We're probably, you know, when you look at all of what's happened, it's real scary. Now what's happened with Gulf War II, the military medical absolutely acknowledges that over 11,000 Gulf War II casualties have come back sick, ill, and many have died.
Now, these are Gulf War II. This is not just Gulf War I.
Another 11,000 already, at least, from Gulf War II.
All right, and there's about at least 11,000 of these healthy young men, you know, most of them were very, very young when they went to the Gulf in 1990-1991. Is at least 11,000 are dead?
That is absolutely correct. Those are the individuals that the Department of Veterans Affairs formally acknowledges that already had been received service connection for their injuries and illnesses from Gulf War I.
And, of course, no insurance company could afford statistics like that. We'll be back here in just a moment. Here at Radio Liberty. Well, our guest this evening is Major Douglas Rocky. We're talking about the depleted uranium. Of course, this is simply part of the overall Gulf War syndrome that is having such a disastrous effect on the boys who were in the Gulf in 91, I suppose, when the real fighting took place. But now, of course, we're sending our boys back into a situation where they're once again going to come into contact with this radioactive material, emits alpha particles, and of course, everybody's told, why, there's nothing to worry about. In fact, I did a program this afternoon, Major, and somebody called in and said, why, there's a fellow up in San Francisco, a very intelligent fellow who works for the military, who'd been involved with military weapons for many years, and they named him. Now, I'm only saying this secondhand. I don't know if it's true or not, but a man named Bill Wattenberg, and he said there's absolutely no danger from depleted uranium weapons. There's absolutely no danger. I'm an expert, and I can tell you that anybody says there's a danger is not telling the truth. Essence, the words to that effect. How would you respond to that?
He's an idiot.
Well, at least you...
we have to understand. In March 8th of 1991, I received a formal memorandum through the Army Chain of Command from Colonel Gregory Lyle of the Defense Nuclear Agency. He stated very specifically, uranium dust oxides are a health threat, but the fragments from intact rounds are a serious health threat. The other thing, the conclusion from the United States Army Environmental Policy Institute report that was released in 1995 stated very specifically, the toxicity of uranium emissions cannot be reduced. That is inherent properties. We also know from our first-hand work that those of us who were exposed got sick. Now, I would ask this individual, did he ever clean up uranium rounds following Gulf War I? Did he participate in the AEPI study? Did he participate in the DU project? And obviously he didn't, or I would know him. Has he ever given any medical care to any of us that are sick? Obviously he has not. So what you're hearing and seeing is another individual that's putting out information as a so-called expert in order to justify and continue the use of uranium munitions. We have to make it real simple. Uranium munitions are solid uranium contaminated with plutonium, neptunium, americium, uranium-236, and the information that's just literally hit the internet from the U.S. Department of Energy, beryllium. Okay, and I don't know anything about beryllium other than it's another toxic metal. When you take this, and you take not just a few pounds, but you take hundreds and thousands of tons, deliberately and willfully spread our radioactive materials into another nation, deliberately and willfully refuse to provide medical care, and deliberately and willfully refuse to clean up all the radioactive contamination that we spread, it's flat wrong. And if he continues to say it's right or can justify this is right, then it's real simple. I just ask him, how many pounds of solid uranium munitions do you want in your backyard? And I'd like to ask every mother, father, brother, sister, son, daughter, grandparent, aunt, and uncle, do they want solid radioactive waste in their backyard,
but of course,
or in their school or in their house?
Well, let's just look at this from the point of view of, well, if it's solid, it really isn't as much of a danger as when it's become a dust. Would that be the fair thing to say?
Well, you have two parts. On the impact, after it's been used, the uranium dust is all over the place. It can definitely be resuspended. We absolutely verified in that in our research.
Hold that thought for just a minute. We're going to bring our stations back from the Great Northwest right now. All right, and so we were talking about certainly the handling of the depleted uranium rounds when they have before they've been exploded and become dust. I mean, certainly they handle them on the ships. I know when my son was in the Navy, they used to handle the munitions, depleted uranium, without even giving it a thought. If you were just to pick up a round, would there be any real danger to you?
As long as it's still in its shielding, no. It's heavy. You don't want to drop it on your foot. However, when we did the research for the 25-millimeter round, depleted uranium round, to be included in the Bradley fighting vehicle, we absolutely verified that there was an upper limit of time that the soldiers could be in that vehicle sitting directly on top of the uranium before they exceeded the safe limits.
Well, now, do some of these boys get cancers or cancer of the rectum or other cancers from prolonged exposure?
Hey, why don't you ask Norman G. Schwarzkopf?
Why do you say that?
Well, guess where he's got the cancer.
I see. Well, I have heard that there is a significant number of the people in the Bradley fighting vehicles who did develop cancer of the rectum.
I don't know. We know that we have a certain limit, and we put recommendations on. Now we know from that they're not following those recommendations. We also know very clearly that the United States Army Soldier's Manual of Common Task, that is the primary training manual with all tasks that every soldier, every warrior must master, requires full respiratory and skin protection be worn by everybody within 25 to 50 meters of any uranium munitions use or contamination. And it states very clearly that uranium munitions contamination will make food and water unusable, and you cannot clean it up.
And yet, of course, this is what we're spreading all over Iraq today. In fact, I talked with a woman that you had put me in touch with from the Livermore Laboratory, and she says that there is a tremendous uproar in the countries of the Middle East, in India, Pakistan, even in Europe, for fear that this dust is going to be spreading from the Iraq over into their area, just as the dust spread from the Chernobyl area into the surrounding areas of Russia.
That's absolutely a valid concern. We know that the uranium munitions plant called National Lead at Albany, New York, when it had a release, and I don't know how we call this a release, either accidental or just neglect, a release of uranium particulates from the facility.
Now, is it the uranium-238, or would it be the 235, or what?
It's the whole mixture. This is the depleted uranium. This is where they were actually making the rounds,
Where
they were also making the depleted uranium counterweights that go on all the commercial aircraft.
Okay.
We know that we had a release at that facility. The U.S. Navy nuclear facility, 30 miles away, the scientist at that U.S. Navy nuclear facility, 30 miles away from the National Lead, they were trying to measure if there are any radioactive emissions or releases from their nuclear facility. Instead, they measured the uranium, depleted uranium contamination coming into their facility from 30 miles away.
You know, it's really very interesting for our listeners out there. If you go up on the Internet, you'll find a lot of material put up there by the government that says there's nothing to worry about. But then you begin going to material from other countries. For instance, in London, one of the most prestigious organizations is the Royal Institute. It's a medical organization. It's been around for many, many years. And you read their material, and they're very worried about the danger of depleted uranium, which is one reason I began to realize that everything Dr. Rocky was saying was true. And certainly there are a number of websites up there. There's one that's traprockpeace.org. Is that right?
That is correct, sir.
And it's got some wonderful articles on the depleted uranium. You need to get up on the Internet and read what you're not going to read in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, what Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly are not going to tell you.
To me, it's horrifying, because prior to the Gulf War, I had never heard of uranium munitions. This is in December of 1990, and I came in the military in 1967. I received a letter from the Pentagon, the senior health physicist, that said, better start thinking about the health and environmental effects of uranium munitions. So obviously I started studying and looking. And then when we completed the ground war, the majority of U.S. casualties that both died and were wounded during Gulf War I, during combat, were from friendly fire use of uranium munitions. Well, when I got tasked to go to clean it up, obviously I started learning rapidly. And let me tell you, as a scientist and an individual who used to be a combat medic in the infantry, you learn real fast when you're there doing it firsthand.
Do you have any idea how many of the 100 men in your unit you work very closely with came down with cancers of one sort or another?
I'm not sure exactly, because it's been very hard, because medical care has been denied and delayed, and testing has been denied and delayed as is if we speak.
But, of course, a certain number of them did come down with cancer.
Absolutely, they did. You know, one of my best friends did, and he died from lung cancer. Another one of my best friend's father, I had a father and son working for me. The father died.
Well, it's a tragic story. You're not going to hear this on 60 Minutes, at least not right at the present, unless we can raise an awareness and force these people to come forward and so we can get treatment for these people. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Major Douglas Rocky. We're talking about depleted uranium, and of course, he was intimately involved with this. It was his job after the first Gulf War to clean up Bradley fighting vehicles and American tanks that had been hit by friendly fire. How many Bradley fighting vehicles, how many tanks were there?
We had a total of 15 Bradley fighting vehicles that were destroyed with friendly fire using uranium munitions, and we had a total of 16 Abrams tanks. Nine of those were actual direct friendly fire, and then the other ones were involved in maintenance where we had a fire, a detonation, or explosion, or they were deliberately destroyed when the tank became disabled and looked like it was going to fall in enemy hands.
Well, now, were you able to get any of them to the point where they would be useful again as far as, you know, could be utilized by the military?
24 of the vehicles, all the Abrams tanks, and 9 of the Bradley fighting vehicles were shipped back to the United States. The Defense Consolidation Facility at the United States Department of Energy, Savannah River site. It took 3 years to clean up those 24 vehicles for disposal or recovery back in. The majority of those were just buried in a massive hole at Savannah River. 3 years in the only facility of its kind in the world, multi-million dollar facility with extremely highly talented experts in radioactive decontamination and equipment recovery. What happened is we left millions, you know, thousands of vehicles all over Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and Kuwait. And we've now compounded that substantially. But not only is it vehicles, we've absolutely, and videotape confirms, we shot apartment buildings up in downtown Baghdad. We shot up water treatment facilities. We shot up anything and everything that moved. Because this stuff is good, kills and destroys.
Well, the question is, do we have any idea what's happened to the people of Kuwait? I mean, we have the whole desert that's full of, you know, the radioactive dust. What's happened to the people in that area? What's happened to their ability to grow crops in that area? What about the health of the people who have been contaminated by this for the last 10 years?
Well, first off, let's remember that the contamination is not limited to the uranium munitions.
Right.
Okay. First, number one, we had all kinds of toxic industrial chemicals, solvents, fuels, and everything else, cleaners that we spilled all over the desert when we went to war, number one. Number two, when we blew up Iraq, Kuwait's, and Saudi's infrastructure, the United States and the coalition did, and Iraq blew everything up, you know, also, we released all of the industrial chemicals that are also toxic that we find in industry, agriculture, medicine, and education.
Hold that thought for just a moment here as we prepare to bring our stations on board. Okay, go ahead, Major Rocky. And so you're talking about, of course, multiple contaminations. So what's happened to the people there in Kuwait or in the southern part of Iraq where we used a lot of this would be the Shia Muslims, where we'd use so much in the way of these dangerous munitions and, of course, subject then to the poisons from the oil field fires and the other chemicals that were released?
Yeah, and we need to go. The other chemicals released, we have to make sure very clear that everybody understands. The United States did provide Iraq with the chemical and biological munitions called weapons of mass destruction prior to Gulf War I.
This was prior to the first Gulf War. We actually provided massive amounts of chemical and biological weapons to the wicked Saddam Hussein. And, of course, he had used those on the Iranians. He'd used those on his own people, the Kurds. And we still backed him. But we can't let the American people know that because then they might question how moral the people are who run Washington, D.C. So is that why we sort of blew them all up there at the end of the war?
That is correct. The conscious decision was made in December of 1990. That decision was between General Norman G. Schwarzkopf, General Charles Horner, and General Powell, now our Secretary of State, and the Vice President of the United States, who was Secretary of Defense, Dick Cheney, that we would deliberately and willfully blow those up in place. We provided all the warnings that when we blow these up in place, we don't just destroy them, but we release them all over, causing a toxic mess where everybody's going to get sick. As a consequence, 250,000 of U.S. troops, sons and daughters, our nation's finest, are now sick and dying or dead. And in Iraq, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia, we're looking at thousands, and actually, according to the World Health Organization, over 1 million.
Now, talking about people in Saudi Arabia?
Kuwait and Iraq, that region,
Iraq. Okay.
They've been exposed to all these toxic properties of war that were released by U.S. actions, Iraqi actions, during war by everybody involved. It's flat wrong.
Well, of course, now we've had another war, and we have 11,000 American casualties have come home. We talk about the 5,000 who've died, 500 who've died. Maybe I think it's about 550 who've died now in Iraq. We seldom talk about the 400 who've died in Afghanistan, but we almost never talk about the 11,000 casualties, American casualties, sent home since the Iraq war began. Do we have any idea how many of these are victims of certainly of chemicals or DU poisoning?
Well, it's a good question. There are probably majority of them are not only were they wounded and injured there, but then also were all exposed to all these toxic chemicals, including the uranium munitions. I mean, first-hand photographic evidence that I have, video evidence I have in my hands, absolutely verifies, shows U.S. soldiers working, walking in around the uranium-contaminated facilities, extensive contamination, without any respiratory or skin protection. And we know they're not getting the medical care. We know congressional investigations have verified at Fort Stewart, Georgia, just a few months ago, that U.S. wounded, injured in combat, were brought back and housed in barracks not fit for hogs and denied medical care. That turned into a massive investigation a couple months ago. It continues to this day. I talked to investigators in the United States General Accounting Office yesterday. They told me that they absolutely knew that Deputy Secretary of Defense Winkenwerder, in charge of all health affairs, at first began and said, we're not going to give the pre-deployment health physicals to our soldiers when they leave this nation. And then they weren't giving them the medical care when they came back. Through the work of many fine organizations, National Gulf War Resource Center, and investigative reporters, congressional and other ones, we have forced the military at least to somewhat comply with that. But they're still not providing medical care to all of the casualties for uranium munitions as required by Department of Defense directives and common sense.
Now, my understanding is that the people who are in the reserve in the National Guard are in a different category than the regular Army recruits, and they don't get the medical care when they get back that would be given to regular Army people. Is there truth to that?
Oh, absolutely. If you're still in the military, you can go over to your Army hospital and get medical care. But if you're Reserve and National Guard, what you have to do is prove that what happened to you happened in the line of duty, in military service. Then you have to submit the paperwork to get the medical care through the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs.
Yeah, but then Veterans Affairs, they're cutting back massively on the veterans' medical benefits. They've taken something like $15 billion away from the Veterans Administration. I suppose they want to give that to Halliburton and some of Dick Cheney's other friends there.
Well, yeah, you know, think about that. Halliburton just got gigged again because they were cheating the government out by claiming they were feeding the soldiers more meals than they actually did. And then they charged them more for gas and oil, and then they got caught out in Nigeria, with bribery. But, that's a whole separate issue.
Right. Well,
but what we have very clearly, and this is what happened to me personally, I got sick last year, about a year ago. My VA physician looked at me and said, you need immediate medical care for uranium poisoning effects, what we know is on there and what we've seen there. It took me 6 months to get to see into a specialist. 6 months. We have the troops coming back right now. There have been congressional investigations. Some of those 11,000 from Gulf War II coming back. They're waiting 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 months for appointments.
And, of course, what they really need to do is to analyze the urinary output of the radioactive material. Is that one of the tests that they do?
Well, that is just one test. I mean, the United States Department of Defense specific guidelines, if we have known that you were in a vehicle, building, or structure hit by uranium munitions, that you were downwind of anything, or you worked in a contaminated area, by Department of Defense directive, issued, number one, by General Eric Shinseki himself, issued by the Secretary of Defense in June of 93, and by Department of Defense directive dated of October of 1993, all individuals should receive this test within 24 hours of exposure. But you can't isolate that testing only to U.S. troops. You have to give it to all coalition troops. But more important, when the battle's over under Geneva Convention, you must give it to all the Iraqi troops that are affected. And under God and everything else, you sure better give it to all the non-combatants. That's the children that are affected, whether they're in Concord, Massachusetts, Vieques, Puerto Rico, Okinawa, Indiana, Florida, or, as we verified congressional records, off the coast of Seattle, because U.S. Navy has absolutely confirmed in letters to Congressman James McDermott, they are deliberately and willfully firing uranium rounds into primary fishing areas right off the coast of Seattle, Washington.
Now, what are they doing? Are they just practicing, or is there some other more diabolical purpose?
Well, they're practicing and keeping their guns all sighted in. You know, you got to remember, you got to go hunting and shoot somebody. You want to make sure your gun works right.
Okay. If there are any callers out there in the Great Northwest who would like to talk to Major Rocky, he'll be with us for another 10-15 minutes. We'll be, of course, doing the second hour of our program with him as well. And if you'd like to get that, why, you can certainly call and ask for the tape, or perhaps you want to get the tapes of both hours. But if you would like to call, you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or if you're here in the Central Coast of California and you have a question for the Major, why, give us a call at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If this is as much of a problem as Major Rocky says it is, then, of course, you would think that there would be a tremendous uproar in the media. You would think that CBS and 60 Minutes and 2020, they would all be doing specials on this. You would think that Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly and Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw would be talking about this to focus our attention on it. But you see, if they totally ignore it, it's almost as if there is no problem there at all. And yet, close to 400,000 of the 695,000 men we sent into the Gulf in 1991 are ill, and many of them have died. And yet, of course, we don't talk about that at all, because the government says there isn't any Gulf War illness. It doesn't exist. There is no single cause for this illness, and that is absolutely right. There's no single cause. There are multiple causes that Major Rocky has talked about this evening. They simply use words to conceal the truth. In fact, you can tell when a government official is lying because his lips are moving. In fact, if you work for government and you want to maintain your job, you lie. And you were actually told to lie for all intents and purposes, weren't you, Major?
Well, that's absolutely correct. They received the Los Alamos Memorandum that was very, very clear, and that came in March of 1991. And then when we did got the Director for the United States Army and Foreign Policy Institute study, I mean, it was very clear again. And then once I started speaking up and telling the truth after I did the research and cleaned up the mess, got sick, could not get medical care for myself or my staff, and could not get medical care for anybody else, the retaliation was rapid. I went from the top job in my field as director of the Edwin R. Bradley Radiological Labs to unemployed. You have to understand, what we have done is we have taken not just a few pounds, but tons and actually hundreds of tons of solid radioactive waste that we could not effectively, legally, and properly dispose of in our nation, in the United States, and we spread it across other nations and throughout the United States in test and manufacturing facilities. We walked away and we refused to clean it up. It's that simple.
And that really is a crying indictment. And the question is it true? I'm convinced it's true. You go up on the web, you look at the Royal Society's website, look at some of the other websites. We'll be having Colonel Durakovich here. He was, of course, an Army colonel. He was involved with treating of Gulf War veterans. And when he said, I want to be able to treat these people with depleted uranium poisoning, he was told he couldn't treat them.
Well, Colonel Durakovich, we need to understand, until he spoke up and started providing medical care for my staff, was not only the United States Army's premier expert in this medically, but he was the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs' premier expert in this medically. And once he spoke up and acknowledged what had happened to my staff and tried to provide medical care and has continued to do so, his life became a living nightmare. He's going to go down in history as one of the true warriors and patriots and heroes of our military in the future, just like Scott Ritter. God bless these guys. They had the courage to stand up and tell the truth against all odds. It's my sheer joy to have worked with these quality of these people.
Well, I had the pleasure of talking to Colonel Rakovich the other day. Of course, it's very obvious that he's coming from a Christian point of view. And as he said, it's my job to take care of the people. It cost me my profession, 18 years in the military. But, of course, you have to do what you have to do. And it was such a pleasure to find a man who feels as deeply about his obligations as a physician as he does, because so many physicians, and I'm not saying all of them, but so many physicians in the military, when they have to make that choice between doing what's right for their patients and keeping their job in the military, choose the military.
Well, he's the absolute epitome. I mean, he is the finest representative of a U.S. Army doctor that you'll find. But he's not the only one. We had other U.S. Army doctors who'd worked with us that lost their careers, too. They're not as vocal as Dr. Durock, Colonel Durockovich is, but they're out there. Colonel Andres Carnegie Bopp, absolutely another one. He's the one that identified all of these serious respiratory problems that, you know, hundreds and thousands of Gulf War II veterans are experienced that we experienced in Gulf War I. And he also became branded, persona non grata.
I think
and then there's a lot in the military. They're doing the best they can, whether they're a physician or a scientist, or God bless the chaplains in the military.
Well, I think that you have to understand the reason for the cover-up is this is a wonderful weapon. I mean, it is one of the most effective killing weapons there is, and the brass doesn't want to give it up. Well, let's go to Earl, who's calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Earl. How are you doing?
Real good, Dr. Stan. How are you today?
Doing just great.
I was just wanting to speak to the major there just a second. I'm kind of intrigued about what he's saying tonight. Very interesting, but it's totally against what I'd really want to believe. You know what I mean?
I don't blame you at all. Incidentally, are you listening on shortwave or internet?
Internet.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
Well, there's one thing you said that kind of concerns me about Scott Ritter. I just saw on a CNN website where he was employed by the Council on Foreign Relations, and that disturbs me that we'd want to use him as any kind of reference.
All right, fine. Well, now, how was he employed by the Council on Foreign Relations?
He was an advisor.
All right. I really can't comment on that. Can you comment on that at all?
I don't know.
We're going to
again, there's a lot. I can tell you there's been a lot of misinformation that's been coming out, specifically put out by senior Army officers in the Pentagon, against anybody that speaks out and tells the truth.
I would say, Earl, that I don't know anything other than the fact that I know there's been an attack on Scott Ritter because he's told the truth. Whether they might have even given him a job just so they could discredit him, I don't know. But I think that he's tried to do what's right, and as far as his association with the CFR, maybe he wasn't smart enough to realize they were setting him up to take a fall.
That's possible, yeah.
Anything else you wanted to ask?
That was all. I was just wondering if he was familiar with the fact.
But Major, do you know Scott Ritter?
Well, yes, I do. I mean, if he goes to the traprockpeace.org website, they can find out a lot more about Scott Ritter, and then he can contact them up there, and they could
get
the answers to the questions.
Go ahead.
I saw Scott Ritter when he resigned. I saw him being questioned by Senator Biden, about the Iraqi situation.
Right.
And he repeatedly said that there were weapons of mass destruction there.
Did he repeatedly say there were?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And that particular day, my wife and I said, we felt like that Senator Biden was being really out the way, you understand? Because he was contradicting him, putting him down. Scott Ritter said over and over that there were weapons of mass destruction there and that President Clinton needed to take action. 3 years later, he was doing an exact 180, and I'm reading he's on the payroll of the CFR. So I got real concerns about Scott Ritter because I watched him say that on
Well, I'll tell you what I think, Earl, and this is just my opinion. I think that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. I think he moved him into Syria. We have this from a number of very, very good sources, and I'm talking about chemical and biological weapons. He didn't have any nuclear at all. He moved those things out of there some years ago. So perhaps, and all I'm saying is perhaps Scott Ritter was telling the truth before, and then later when he says he doesn't have any, he knew very well exactly what our intelligence knows. And that Saddam, who moved his weapons of mass destruction into Syria, we'll just have to wait and see. But thanks so much for calling. Let's go to Rex calling from Yakima. Hi, Rex. How are you doing?
Doing great. I'm calling tonight, and I've been listening to the show, and it's been very interesting. it's been very sad at the same time to know that this is going on.
It sure is. It's sort of like realizing maybe there isn't a Santa Claus.
For sure, for sure. But I do want to point out something that you've said that I think is very significant, both of you, and that is that it's important for people to stand up for what they know is right.
Yeah. Amen to that.
And I wanted to also point out that there are probably there's quite a few organizations out across the country that people can do this and join together in standing up for what's right. One organization I would like to share with you, and I'm sure that you're both aware of it, it's an educational organization that just watchdogs our representatives and so forth, and that's the John Birch Society.
Okay, hold this just a moment here. We're going to have to go to a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
All right, we have Rex from Yakima, and Rex is commenting that he feels the John Birch Society is a watchdog organization. It certainly has an excellent magazine. Many of the people I know there, and I have a great deal of faith in. But you know, the one thing about the John Birch Society, and if you listen to my programs long enough, Rex, you realize that we talk about the Masons. The John Birch Society will not criticize the Masons or the occult foundation of what's going on today. Why that is, I just don't know. Do you have any other comments?
The only other comment I'd like to say is, and I've kind of said it already, is it's very important to stand up for what's right. And those of us that do and believe, like you say, that are Christians and know that you have to do the right thing, you're on the right team.
Amen to that. And I agree with you totally. And I think that I read New American Magazine from cover to cover. Bill Jasper, who is the senior editor, is a personal friend of mine. And the information that the John Birch Society puts out is excellent. Okay?
Well, thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you so much. Let's go to John, colleague from Post Falls. Hi, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well there. Major Rocky, I thank you for your service to our country, first of all. And my prayers go with you and your buddies in the have served so well. My question is, help me understand why it's necessary to use 235, the heaviest element in the periodic table, when, it's been a few years since I had physics, but I recall the equation of motion is 1/2 mv². So the important thing is velocity. If the goal is simply to get a little more kinetic energy in the system, you just increase the speed of the shell. That's more important, really, than the mass, isn't it?
Well, you have two composite things. We have, you know, the tremendous density for 238, okay?
Yeah.
But the other thing, too, is pyrophoric.
Oh, pyrophoric, yeah.
Oh, that's great. The round is on fire the minute it leaves the tube, okay? And it's flying down round range. It's on fire. And when it strikes anything, and I don't care what it is, it strikes anything, it breaks up. Fragments, about 40% of it break up, and these are pieces of uranium now moving at high velocity that are on fire. Oh, it's great. I mean, catastrophic detonations due to concussion and to secondary ignition.
I see. Well, I follow you, sir, but I think we ought to think a little bit beyond the immediate military expediency, immediate military objective. And if the goal is simply kinetic energy, you can achieve kinetic energy with just a faster round.
Well, maybe not, but this is what the military is using, and of course it's a very dangerous thing. And look, thanks, we're out of time, but this is what they're using, and you can argue with the military, but they don't want to give up this weapon, and it's not kinetic energy. They want something that's going to burn and going to explode and going to destroy. And there's nothing better than depleted uranium to kill and maim and destroy. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
Yeah.
Okay, fine, and I'll ask Max who's hanging on to hang on till the next hour. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening has been a Major Doug Rocky, and if you'd like to get a copy of this program, why, you can always give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WARREN, and we'll actually have a second hour as well, and go into much other information, which we hope many of you will want to have. Because you need to get informed about what this is going on, and I want you to go up on the Internet, if you have access to it, go to TrapRockPeace.org, excellent website, got some things from Major Rocky there. Go to the Royal Institute over in London and look at their material. Realize that the CIA and the military is putting up all sorts of information on the Internet, and then try to determine the truth for yourself. Keeping in mind this program and several other programs we're going to be having here in this next week or so dealing with depleted uranium. And then, of course, this is the time I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And if you believe that we are serving a useful purpose, we hope that many of you will decide you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because this is how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day, starting at 7 in the morning and going until 10 o'clock at night. But we have a unique opportunity to reach out across America by radio, by satellite, by shortwave, and we're 4 hours on shortwave. Our evening program is now heard on shortwave starting this week at 5.745 megahertz. And then, of course, on the Internet, 5 hours a day, and you can actually hear the second hour there if you'd like. But we hope that you'll tell others about our programs. We hope that if you do decide you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, you'll call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We do hope that if you'd like to get a copy of our December newsletter, which explains why the Supreme Court removed God and prayer from our schools, why, we'll be glad to send you a free copy at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You can go to our website at radioliberty.com and listen to our programs and pull down our newsletters there free of charge. You have our permission to copy them. We mentioned several videos we think are so vitally important. One is called The Diaprax in the Church, and it's the story of the Church Grove movement and how it is designed to manipulate Christians, how it's designed to use techniques, psychological techniques, to control their attitude, and, of course, to change their attitude towards God and family and country, how music is used to change your perspective. Music is very powerful. We're told, oh, God creates all of music. That's why we use this loud, horrible music in our churches, because God created it, and I believe it came right out of the pit of hell. And I believe it's being used to change the perception and perspective of people who listen to it. And I don't believe music like that has any place in our churches. It's the same music you'd hear at a rock concert where, of course, the devil and his people are presiding. And I believe we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political and ideological battlefield. And it's about time God's people begin to understand that. And so if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, get my video, The Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you'd like to have more information, you can go to you can call 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You need to understand the spiritual nature of the battle we're engaged in. Another excellent video is Megiddo, The March to Armageddon, going into what's happening, the coming Third World War, and what lies ahead in the coming months and years. And lastly, of course, my video, Iraq, The Untold Story, pointing out that all of the wars of the last century were fought for phony reasons. There was no Gulf of Tonkin at all. That was just the excuse to get our boys in to die. The Spanish didn't sink the Maine. Pearl Harbor was totally contrived. They knew it was coming. I have the pages from Secretary of War Stimson's diary on November 25th, where he simply points out that President Roosevelt, he met with him, and President Roosevelt said, we're about to be attacked. The only question is how we will get the Japanese to fire the first shot and have as few casualties as possible. Pray for America. Pray for revival, because if we don't turn back to God, God will never again bless this nation. And please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow night, we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Somebody's on line two.
How many lines do you have come in, Stan?
Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Please hold your call. Well, no, you can call in anytime you want to, because right now we have a Mike calling in from Santa Cruz, waiting patiently on the line to talk to Major Douglas Rocky. Hi, Mike.
You made a statement of them. They were using the depleted uranium as counterweights for the wheels on the aircraft.
Would you like to comment? He commented that they used depleted uranium as counterweights. I don't know for the wheels. Now, Major Rocky.
Yeah, they use depleted uranium counterweights throughout all commercial aircraft. It's very a lot of use throughout all commercial aircraft. And what we have had in the past is when we have a commercial aircraft crash and we have the burning and the fire, we have the release of the uranium oxides.
Now, why do they use that? Because it's a concentrated weight that they want to be able to concentrate where the weight is?
Exactly. They have, extremely high density. Uranium-230 has an extremely high density. So you have a lot of weight for a very small volume. And in an aircraft, the volume is the key thing, but they also want to have the weight and balance. So they use it in all commercial aircraft. And what we have had with our national traffic, the guys do the air crash investigations, when they've gone in there where they had the fire still burning, they have the uranium burn, they've ended up with uranium poisoning also.
Okay, Mike, anything else you want to ask?
Is there a real advantage over your standard, say, like on a car with lead?
I have no idea. You got to remember the uranium-238 is all free.
Oh, so it is cheaper than lead, huh?
Oh, yeah, U.S. Department of Energy has got over 1 million metric tons of this stuff laying around. So we have to get rid of our radioactive waste some way. So that's the reason why we use it in uranium munitions. That's the reason why they put it in counterweights and aircraft and forklift trucks. And, hey, that's also the reason why they have DU Crete. Go on down to your hardware store and buy DU Crete. That's concrete that has depleted uranium in it. Isn't that neat?
It's sort of like, Mike, it's sort of like fluoride. Fluoride's a byproduct of the production of aluminum and of fertilizers. And fluoride is just so toxic, it's very expensive to, they have to put in special dumps. So they came up with a better solution. They sold the American people that we ought to put it in our water because it's going to make us so much healthier and our teeth are going to be so much brighter. And they don't point out the fact that it decreases fertility and it attacks the endocrine system and produces cancer and dulls the brain. And they're putting it in the water supplies all over America because it's sure a lot cheaper than putting it into a toxic dump. Any other questions?
No, thanks.
Okay, fine. All right, that was Mike calling from Santa Cruz. And our telephone number is 464-8295. Or out across America, if you're listening to us, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question for Major Doug Rocky, who's been telling us about the tragedy of depleted uranium and the fact that there is a conscious cover-up on the part of certainly the administration, the military, because they don't want to give this up as a weapon. And, of course, because of their influence on the general media and because they have people all across this country are going around and saying there's nothing to worry about, this is all hysteria, these people, and they usually have a little line, oh, these people probably believe there was a conspiracy behind the death of President Kennedy, they believe in black helicopters, they believe in a Jewish Masonic conspiracy, you know that sort, don't you? And then, of course, you're sort of demonized and marginalized, and nobody will pay any attention to you. Well, I think that Major Rocky is certainly very reliable. He's on the front lines of this battle. He's giving everything to try to get the truth out. And you have actually testified before some of the congressional committees and investigations?
Well, I've, United Nations, the British House of Commons, British House of Lords, prepared reports, direct first-hand reports and testimony before the United States House of Representatives. committees. Back right at, in November, well, Veterans Day of 2000, I was ushered into the United States Senate and spoke for 25 minutes. That was an astonishing event. That was conducted in one of the main ballrooms for what was called the Coalition and Veterans Day Breakfast in November of 2000. It's a, you know, I mean, when you're ushered in to speak to the some of the fine, you know, people that run our nation, we had not only senators and congressmen, but we had lead military leaders, we had other leaders of government, civilian leaders. They were all there. It's been an extremely interesting experience.
But, of course, although you've talked to these people, are they doing anything about it? Have they tried to do anything about it? Are they capable of doing anything, or are they really as helpless as we are?
Well, they've attempted to, but again, the Pentagon just totally disregards Congressman Christopher Shays, Congressman Bernard Sanders, okay, and presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich, and also Congressman James McDermott, okay, and then several others have tried to do what they can. They've held hearings, they've written directives, we've published laws, we've told them to comply, but you have individuals that are just arrogant, and this comes down to simple things. They found a good weapon, and they're going to do it. We found technology that allowed us to destroy nations and kill and destroy, and we're going to use it. And what's happened is we've totally disregarded the health and environmental effects. Just a few weeks ago, and again, I'd worked on it several years ago, the United States Department of Defense had to finally acknowledge that over 39 million acres of our prime land has been contaminated in our country alone by military operations, and they are unable to clean it up. They don't have the money to clean it up. And what really scares me is, having worked on this for years, I don't see any attempts by them to prevent it in the future.
Now, of course, was this contaminated simply by firing the weapons in these areas of these military reservations? Or what are these regions that have been so heavily contaminated, other than perhaps when they were actually manufacturing the products?
Well, they're not only manufacturing and tested, but they're firing all types of weapons and they're releasing all kinds of toxic industrial chemicals during their operations.
All right. So, are these military operations, or are these adjacent to military facilities, or what?
All of the above.
All right. So, the large areas are being contaminated. Nothing's really being done about it. And of course, you know, the tragedy is that the average civilian has no idea of the implications of what's going on any more than the average civilian over in Iraq really understands that he is, of course, living in a situation that can, once this stuff gets into you, it can impact on every aspect of your body. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the genetic changes. My understanding is there have been some cases over in England, specifically one case where a British soldier had three children. And all of them have been deformed. They've done some genetic analysis on him, and they found out that there are very definite genetic changes in this man, presumably because of exposure to depleted uranium and the radioactive particles, the alpha particles. Do you know anything about that case?
Yes, I do. Dr. Albert Schott from the World Health Organization did the studies on that. What they did is they collected the biological samples from individuals that absolutely were exposed to uranium munitions contamination during Gulf War I. And what they did is they looked at the DNA, and they found that the chromosomal aberrations, this is the damage and rearrangement of the chromosomes, absolutely occurred. And what has just happened in the last few days over in England, a soldier that is very sick himself personally, and children who were conceived and born after the war, with confirmed high levels of uranium in there. Again, Dr. Asa Durakovic did the analysis. When they did the chromosomal aberrations, they found the problems. And the British High Court has just awarded, on appeal, that individual full recognition and disability and compensation for the exposures caused by uranium munitions and for the damage to his health and to his children.
Now, was he a victim of the first Gulf War, or was he somebody who was in Kosovo or Bosnia, or where was he contaminated?
He was contaminated in Gulf War I when he was ordered to do just like I did, but for the British military, clean up the contaminated equipment.
And, of course, it wasn't simply in Gulf War I, because a lot of this, of course, was a shot up. We shot up Bosnia, and then we shot up Kosovo. And, of course, not only were our troops and the British troops harmed, but what about the civilians? Do we have any idea of the implications, how many of the civilians in those regions are damaged? You mentioned that it was felt that there were over 1 million people in Iraq, and the Kuwait was seriously in damaged health-wise. Do we have any idea how many people in the Balkans?
I don't have an exact number. We just held the World Uranium Medical Conference at the University of Hamburg in Hamburg, Germany, last October. I think you can get to that website through TrapRock website, or just, you know, go in World Uranium Conference, World Uranium Weapons Conference. In the medical reports from physicians from all over where this stuff has been used, or the troops or the individuals been affected, are up there. I know personally, having seen the epidemiological and the medical data from the physicians that have been working in Iraq, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia, that it was absolutely frightening. Again, the exact numbers, I don't know. Again, we're coming down to the problem. The medical care for all of these exposures has been ordered, and the medical care for all of these exposures is deliberately, willfully delayed, denied, or ineffective.
That is really the most frightening thing. It's crass disregard for human suffering and human, just for humanity itself.
That is correct. I mean, what has happened just again in the last week, and Dan Rather had a major story on it last week, where the soldiers were giving this drug for malaria that, according to the FDA and everybody, causes horrible side effects, psychological side effects, and investigators believe that that is one of the causes for the high suicide rates among the Gulf War II veterans, and why we're seeing all the spousal abuse when they come back to the States.
No, for our listeners, this is a malaria drug, an anti-malaria drug. Are they giving that routinely to all of our people over there?
As I understand it, that is correct. Mm-hmm. And the last press release, as a result of the congressional hearings that the National Gulf War Resource Center, Steve Robinson, did, and also on the Evening News with Dan Rather, the military was, the last I heard, still refusing to do a review of this drug and what the effects are.
And, of course, we know that there have been a number of instances where men have come home from from Iraq and they've killed their wives or mistreated their wives. And of course, it's thought that it's related to this drug that is known to have a specific effect on the brain and create either suicidal tendencies or violent outbreaks of rage.
Yeah, this was, again, a UPI report. Mark Benjamin and Dan Homestead did this, dated January 29th. Quote, the U.S. Army didn't investigate whether a malarial drug it developed could trigger suicide by soldiers, despite a new government suicide warning, complaints from soldiers, a senator, and a leading veterans advocate. Pentagon spokesman Martha Rudd told UPI the Pentagon saw no reason to consider the anti-malarial drug Lariam, L-A-R-I-A-M, as a possible factor in suicides. But the FDA, quote, the FDA Drug Administration last year ordered that all patients taking the drug receive a written warning that Lariam, quote, can rarely cause serious mental problems in some patients.
Well, I think it'll be a very cold day in hell before the military comes out and tells the soldiers that they have any rights at all. The soldier, he goes into the military, he really loses his rights, unfortunately, but after all, this is the way a military is. Its one job is to win wars, and it has to sometimes be very ruthless in that. But, certainly in peacetime, I think everything should be done to protect our soldiers, and sometimes, these vaccines that are given, I don't think they're called for, and yet you as a soldier have no right to differ, to challenge what's being done.
That's absolutely correct. Again, we have different purposes here. We can protect our soldiers. In order to protect our soldiers, we have to give them equipment that's functional and operational. Okay? That means gas masks that are not defective, chemical suits that are not defective. The United States General Accounting Office, before the war started, confirmed that the gas masks and the chemical suits, some of those issued, were defective. And the military did nothing about it. We have to ensure that the troops get the proper education and training that they need to go into these combat areas. Again, that's been absolutely verified. It's been on the news and congressional investigations, and now the Army is all of a sudden changing some training practices for troops to send to Iraq. We have to ensure that we don't send these troops into toxic areas, as we continue to do, with total disregard. we have to make sure that we provide the troops that go in there with their pre-deployment physicals, which are absolutely required by congressional directive and Department of Defense directives, and yet are ignored. And we need to make sure that when we send any troops in there, and they do serve our nation, as I have and my colleagues have, that when we're injured or made ill, that our nation fulfills the obligation to take care of our nation's finest sons and daughters. And it's not happening. And myself and others decided that we had to speak out.
Well, I'm
as
so
Army officers, as Air Force officers, as Navy officers, as Coast Guard officers, Marine officers, because it's flat wrong.
Well, I admire you for what you're doing, and I appreciate the fact that you are speaking out, even though at great personal expense. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And right now, calling from upstate New York is Rose. Hi, Rose. How you doing?
Hi. Good evening. I have a strange question, but first I want to make a comment with it. We know about population control, chemtrails, uranium poisoning, and the anthrax, and all these wonderful things. I was wondering, do they tell the soldiers not to smoke?
No, I'm sure they don't. In fact, they always used to. I remember during the Second World War, they used to give them a package of Camels and all their field rations.
I mean, I think about the craziness about don't smoke all over the world now, and they're doing all these things at the same time. Something doesn't sit right here.
Well, you're almost like a schizophrenia. On one side, we're doing one thing. On the other side, we're doing exactly the opposite to counter the good things we're trying to do. Yes, behind so much of what's going on today, Rose, I am firmly convinced there is a population control agenda. And, you know, as you know, I've written extensively on this. And although we don't usually talk about it because people don't want to hear it, a common denominator to much of what's going on is population control. And another one is destruction of the American military. Is there a better way to destroy a great nation than destroy its warrior class? Is there a better way to destroy the warrior class than to send our young, healthy people into a situation where they're going to come back and two-thirds of them are going to be ill? Is there a better way that you can think of? Have another question, Rose?
Stan, I got something very important here because Rose just tapped on something that's extremely important to understand.
You go right ahead.
A few months ago, when the U.S. military personnel, the individuals in Iraq, started coming back and dying from all the respiratory problems, they said it was some strange pneumonia. Well, it's not. It's the toxic exposures. Now, what was officially published on Medline, Medscape, for all physicians in the nation, by the senior, most senior military physician responsible for medical care in the Department of Defense, was that the respiratory problems and the deaths that the soldiers were incurring in Iraq were due to smoking cigarettes. That you can go back. It was on Medline, Medscape. I think you can pull it up in the National Gulf War Resource Center reports, but it was there.
I think somebody calls that cover-up. That might be another word for it.
They
do not want the American public or even our fighting men to realize all of the potential complications from the depleted uranium will produce problems. Certainly, the release of the chemicals will produce pulmonary problems. And, of course, certainly in susceptible individuals, once these processes are set up, they can be disastrous. Rose, you want to hang on until after the break?
Sure.
Okay, fine. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with Major Rocky. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, give us a call. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Major Rocky, who is now retired from the military. And Rose, did you have another question or comment?
Well, it would just relate to the same thing. Is there any information about why they're so focused on the gases? I mean, I remember they even went after bread manufacturing. They said that the smell of bread was dangerous and made them put some, you know, expensive equipment and things. Is there some interrelationship here between the gases of smoke or any of the others that would be involved in this stuff?
I don't know. You'd have to go and talk to somebody that's familiar with smoking and all the hazards.
But nothing you're aware of in the military weaponry or anything that would be affected by these gases?
Well, remember, he's talked about, of course, how toxic the depleted uranium is if it gets into your lungs. And, of course, this is a very fine radioactive dust. How this produces a terrible pneumonitis and does it produce a sort of a fibrosis?
Called calcified granulomas and scar tissue, and then what you have is a total decrease in your arterial oxygen, and then as a consequence, you have your cellular functions are decreased. Now, individuals that are smoking, already have problems with smoking, are absolutely more susceptible to all these exposures and have more problems. That's very clear in all the literature.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
All right, fine. Well, thank you for calling. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. As we're exploring, of course, the field of depleted uranium and this terrible impact upon the human body. But we're talking about a battlefield over there. We have well over 100,000 men in Iraq, and most of them are in areas that are heavily contaminated over this radioactive dust, as well as, of course, the people are there, the children are there, and, of course, what's this going to do as far as their genetic makeup is concerned? How many of these young men, when they do, of course, have children, will their children have genetic abnormalities? These are the frightening things to contemplate, and nobody wants to talk about. Do you know anything about the problems that we had after the Gulf War, where people were coming back and were having children with deformities?
There's a lot of research that's been done on it, again, and I'm not focused on that, but there's other individuals that are doing that extensive work. And from my understanding and talking with them, it's downright scary.
Yeah. I actually, some years ago, I did do the interviews with people who were tracking that, and there were certain horrible, horrible genetic abnormalities. There was really at a very high rate among the veterans of the first Gulf War. But we don't talk about that sort of thing. In fact, everything is done to keep this from the younger generation. Remember, that was 10 years ago. A lot of the young people volunteering for military service at the present time, I've forgotten about that. But who would want to go off and fight in a foreign war, realizing that they might very well be so damaged genetically they could never have children? They could never have a son or a daughter. And the tragic situation is that they are doing everything they can to keep the current members of the military from understanding what's happened in the past. One of the frightening things is, my understanding is, about 60% of those who are in the military now have no intention of re-upping. In fact, as soon as they can get out, they're out of the military, they're out for good. We have to have people who are willing to fight for America. But you don't fight for America going halfway around the world to fight an imperialistic war. We'll be right back. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening is Major Doug Rocky, and we're talking about depleted uranium and, of course, all the other toxic effects on people that have occurred and are occurring today. If you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, now, the Major, do you think that the word is getting out in the military that, you know, even though they're not supposed to talk about this, the officers who want to keep their rank are still not to talk about it, do you think there's a growing awareness in the military really of some of the dangers that we talk about?
I think there is to some degree, but again, the information has not been given to the soldiers. We put the training curriculums together, the education, the knowledge, all that stuff together, but it doesn't get out there. And the other thing that we have is the senior leaders in the military that are still leading this charge to cover it all up use their rank and authority to tell the kids it's not true. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. I've watched a video from a U.S. Army second lieutenant in downtown Baghdad where he approaches scientists and they absolutely have extensive uranium contamination in and around an apartment building, a residential apartment building. No doubt extensive radioactive contamination from the use of the 30-millimeter round fired by the A-10 Warthog aircraft. And as the soldiers came up, first there was a private. The private says, oh, we don't worry about it. It's all over the place. And actually verified by photographic evidence, video evidence. And then the second lieutenant in charge of this group comes up there, and it's obvious that they've done nothing to protect his own soldiers himself from exposures, even though it's absolutely required in the U.S. Army Soldier's Manual of Common Tasks. They just don't do it. And then the soldier said, well, as long as you don't touch it or come in contact with it all the time, it's okay. I mean, again, we're coming back to basic science literacy. You know, how much does it take before you know that you can't eat lead paint dust, that you can't get all these toxic industrial chemicals or organic solvents in your body? How much smarts does it take before you realize that if you get solid radioactive materials into the body through ingestion, inhalation, absorption, or into wounds, you're going to get sick?
Well, what about the effect of this on the land where they're going to grow crops? If they grow crops in land that's contaminated with this, won't those crops contain this radioactive material?
Well, my understanding, again, I'm not an expert in that, and my knowledge is very limited. From what I understand, talking to people that are, that there are certain crops that they are absolutely will absorb the radioactive materials, and then that can get transferred in there or the other toxic industrial chemicals released. That absolutely happens. We know that happened up around Fort Greeley in Alaska. The use of chemical munitions and radiologic materials were used up there and deliberately released under Project Shad, contaminated the surrounding area. We know that the animals, the wild animals, the deer, the moose, and all that stuff, and the other animals, and the standard cattle that they have there, did ingest this stuff, and then it did get passed on to the people that live up there, and they got sick. Absolutely confirmed.
Okay, fine. Well, what was done for them? Was there anything that could be done?
Nothing. I mean, you have to understand, that's the reason why we have to do a prevention. Once you get radioactive materials into your body and you start getting the damage, that's it.
What about chelation? Will chelation get any of this out?
Well, you know, that's the purpose of reason why the medical directors were stated to do an immediate radiobioassay and then do this testing. Because if you can identify if there is an exposure, and you get them promptly to an effective medical facility with good doctors, it is possible to do chelation therapy to remove some of it. And the other thing, too, when I'm talking to the doctors, the lung experts that have worked with me, if they got it rapidly, they could do a lung lavage to try and remove it out of the lungs for those that are inhaled. But all this stuff is dangerous, and all of it must be done by, you know, trained experts in medicine, physicians that are specialized in this. But we've got to come down to the fundamental thing again. This is the simplest thing we have to understand. We can discuss and debate all of this stuff about what are the health effects, whether or not what can we do for medical treatment. Why don't we just look at prevention? Why don't we look at the fundamental question again? What right does any nation have to take solid radioactive waste and spread it in another nation, refuse to clean it up, and refuse to do medical care? You know, it's a fundamental question.
Four is being a human being, and four is believing that there is certain right and wrong. There is no justification for it, but it seems to be that when you're the biggest fellow on the block, the biggest bully on the block, you can do pretty well whatever you want to. That we spend as much as the 20 other major nations in the world on our military. In other words, we spend an equivalent of all the money that the French and the Germans and the Japanese and the Russians and the Chinese, to the 20 other top nations in military, we spend more for our military than all of them put together. That makes us the most powerful military force in the world. And, of course, when you do that, well, you can do pretty well what you want to, but the question is, should you? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Major Douglas Rocky, and we're talking about depleted uranium. We were talking about do we have a right to contaminate the rest of the world? And we have all this depleted uranium, about a million pounds of it or a million tons. I don't know how much we have. We got to do something with it, so we've made it into munitions, and then, of course, we can blow it up throughout the world, a very effective tool. But, of course, do we have a moral right to contaminate other people's countries? And, you know, there's something that's known as blowback. In other words, when you do something bad to another country, sometimes there is a counter-reaction, and you may very well find that there'll be problems in your own country as a result of what you've done to somebody else. And really my concern is that men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Now, I don't think the average individual, the average American, has any idea of much of what we've talked about tonight. I don't think the average American really understands the enormity of the crimes that have been committed by our government against humanity. It all seems to be such a convenient way to do things. We're the most powerful nation in the world, and of course we live a very, very good life. We can buy things cheaply. Well, we have affluence really unparalleled throughout all the rest of the world. So most people, as long as times are good, really aren't concerned. And yet there are other things that are more important than materialism and physical things. There are this sense of right and wrong, this sense of morality, this sense of nobility that has to separate us from the animals or from people who live in underdeveloped countries. Not that they cannot be noble as well, but people who dedicate their lives to doing something not for themselves but for the good of humanity, well, that's what nobility is really all about. And I find there are some people like Major Rocky and others, Colonel Turakovich, who will be having on our program sometime next week, who already have taken the noble or the aristocratic path to follow. But unfortunately, I think so many people follow the easy path, and that is ignore anything bad. I don't want to hear about it. I'm just going to lead the good life. And my fear is that if we are not involved, then the good life may soon come to an end. How would you respond to that thought?
Well, I think that's right on, and I'd like to do a little quotation, because right now I'm sitting in Illinois, and where I'm sitting, a great president by the name of Abraham Lincoln trod this ground where I am right now before he became president.
All right, well, I'm going to have to get that quotation, of course, when we get back. We want to, of course, bring up back the other stations that are out there that are pulling this down, and so we're going to have to give them just a moment. And then as soon as we hear the music, we know they've joined us. I want to hear that quotation from Abraham Lincoln. Go right ahead, Dan.
Abraham Lincoln, at the Gettysburg Address, when he was dedicating that cemetery where so many sons and daughters of our nation died during a horrible battle during the Civil War. And what he said to me is extremely important, and it relates to exactly what you just said. And I'd like to read this quote. We've all memorized it since childhood, and I think it's extremely important because his words, his immortal words, are what we need to consider today and do something about. And I'd like to read this very carefully.
Go ahead.
It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
Well, certainly Abraham Lincoln had a wonderful, wonderful way of expressing things, and I often think of the opening words of that Gettysburg Address, because I'll never forget when I was a freshman in public speaking, and I was 16 years old. I was the youngest person in the class, just turned 16, and of course everybody else in the class was older. I was big and gainly and really very insecure, and we were told to read something that really impressed us, something that we really felt was really important. So I decided I was going to memorize and give the Gettysburg Address, which I did. And, of course, the professor of the public speaking was a personal friend of my aunt who worked at the university, and I was doing everything I could to impress him so that he would tell her, that, of course, about me, and she'd be proud of me. And so after I got done giving the Gettysburg Address, why, Professor Perloff was his name, got up and he said, "I have been a speech professor for 40 years, and I've heard many renditions of the Gettysburg Address, but I want you to know that without doubt that was the worst rendition I've ever heard. Well, here I am. I'm just shriveling down in my seat. But I'll never forget those opening words, you know. Talking about the 87 years ago, our forefathers brought forth in this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Well, 87 years before this was given, I believe it was 1863, was 1776. And what he was doing was really quoting the Declaration of Independence, that all men were created equal. That was the basic concept of America. They were not evolved equal. They didn't just born equal. They were created because there was a God. That all men were created equal was the very foundation of this nation, and the government were instituted to preserve our God-given rights. Isn't it a shame that few people understand that today?
Yes, it is. And, you know, we have to go back to the fundamentals. If there is a need in a time where I have to defend my nation and go back to war, I will. And all of the other individuals that I know that I work with will, without hesitation. But we have to ensure that there's a viable threat against our nation, and that when we do go to war and we serve the have the consequences, whether you're killed, you're wounded, or you're become sick, that you receive the medical care that you earn by defending our nation. It's real simple. Myself and the others that are working on this are not asking for anybody to do anything different. We're just asking to honor that last full measure that our nation's sons and daughters give.
But see, the thing is, you have to have people in positions of power who are men of integrity, and you have to have that within the command structure of your military. And I believe we have too many yes men in the military and too few statesmen, too few true leaders who are dedicated to the troops rather than, of course, preserving their position and advancing their careers. Until we have returned to a moral foundation and moral leadership, then, of course, no man's life or property are safe in this country. And that, of course, is the general theme we go over again. We believe there's a spiritual battle, and the wicked people have taken control of the reins, not of the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, but the entire function of our government. And we've got to get God-fearing people in there, men of integrity, men who truly fear God.
One of my most favorite movies is a Jimmy Stewart movie called Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Right.
You know, there's a time, and I think Mr. Smith needs to go back to Washington. Jimmy, where are you?
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got Mike Perutka, who's running for office, and if you haven't heard my interviews with him, why, you really should. He's running for the Constitution Party, and I did an interview with him about 10 days ago. I was so impressed because I threw every difficult question at him, and he came back with a constitutional, straightforward answer. And I was, of course, I'm supposed to be impartial, but I was ready to cheer. Right now, let's go to Herman, who's calling from Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are we doing?
Doing great. Thank you for this interesting program. Recently, I heard Chuck Colson talk about the value of morality, and he said one of the problems with our country today is the fact that we have lost sight of the value of morality in a culture. And if you looked at the Super Bowl, the entertainment in the middle, and also the fact that the Academy Awards and the other awards, you never hardly ever hear anyone thank God. They thank their producer, they thank their grandmother, they thank everybody, but they rarely, if ever, mention God, as if he doesn't exist. And that's what we're headed for in this country. And recently there was a documentary on the History Channel about Athens. Gave the history of Athens, how she reached the zenith of her power and then became arrogant and sent off a huge fleet with soldiers to take over Sicily to start building an empire. And she lost 70,000 men and all of her fleet. And that was the beginning of her end. And then Sparta, which had been her enemy, allied with Persia, which was still smarting from her defeat, and they came in and they destroyed Athens and made them destroy all of her fleet after the defeat, and she never again regained her prominence, you know, and history often repeats itself, and something like that a terrible, terrible disaster could happen to America, because I think we've gone past the point of just defending ourselves to where we are trying to become an empire, and we know what happened to, you know, to Nazi Germany. We know what happened to Imperial Japan.
Well, don't forget about ancient Rome. In fact, the similarities between ancient Rome, Gibbon's description of the rise and fall of the Roman Empire, are pretty frightening, parallel to what's going on in America today.
That's right. And, you know, one question I had regarding the depleted uranium as well is, are there any other countries that are stocking their munitions with the same weapon?
Well, over 20 countries. Again, the United States gives it away.
Mm-hmm.
You can purchase it. The Soviet Union is making it and is giving it away. We know the British, the Canadians, the Australians, Pakistan. I mean, if you've got a credit card, you know, I'm not sure I'd do it, but I have, you know, given other individuals within the military, we know that there's an 800 number that you can call with your credit card and get how much you want.
Wow.
I mean, you have to understand, uranium munitions are extremely effective. The purpose is to kill and destroy. And again, I come back to the directive I got in March of 1991. We were told to lie in our reports, disregard the health and environmental effects in order to sustain the use of uranium munitions, because they do not, I want to repeat, do not want them deleted from the arsenal. But it comes back to the fundamental question that I've asked. Yes, we can defend our nation. Yes, we go to war. But when we go to war, we can't contaminate air, water, and soil where we can never clean it up. And we can't leave a tragic mess of health and environmental effects that affect the future generations. There's a difference between going to war and defending our nation, and going to war and contaminating God's earth such that it can never be used again.
And there's other people's homes and other people's nations. And imagine how the Arabs are going to feel towards America when they begin to understand that we have contaminated their holy land over there.
They do understand it.
Well, if there is a God and if he's just, then maybe he will require a judgment someday.
Well, remember those words of Thomas Jefferson, "For God who gave his life gave us liberty, but can the liberties of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and his justice cannot sleep forever." And those words are engraved in the marble there at the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C., the most beautiful of all the monuments in Washington, D.C. But I will tell you, those words are so applicable to America today. "For I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice cannot sleep forever." Anything else, Sermon?
No, just amen to that, and ask our listeners to pray and support this program.
Well, we certainly
get the message out.
Right. Good night. God bless you.
God bless you both. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and that, of course, was Herman calling from Carmel. If you're out there in the listening audience, we have time for one or two more calls. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. So give us a call if you have a question, you have a comment, if you agree or disagree with what we're saying. But I think that Major Rocky's information is so vitally important, and it's so important that you understand the implications of what we're doing as far as our soldiers over in Iraq, as far as the Iraqis over in Iraq, as far as the perception of the people who live in that area, and even the people in Europe are furious with us because of what we're doing. And remember, you can't antagonize everybody in the world. Because if you ever have a problem and you don't have any friends, I don't care how strong you are, if the whole world is against you, why, one day this is going to end up coming back to haunt us. So I'm really very, very concerned of the implications of what's going on and over this next few days and weeks, where we're going to be talking with other experts in this field. And I think you'll be amazed at what so many of these people are telling and about the fact that the military is intentionally and purposely withholding treatment from the men who fought and risked their lives and become permanently incapacitated defending our nation. And of course, the great tragedy is that the average individual doesn't seem to be concerned. There's a wonderful video, if you'd like to see it. It's called The Thanks of a Grateful Nation. It's with Ted Danson. You can get it down at Blockbuster Video. The Thanks of a Grateful Nation. Let me suggest you get that, and perhaps through the miracle of a video, why you will be motivated to be willing to take a stand and join Major Rocky in this epic effort on his part to awaken the American people to the very real danger that we face today.
One of the things that's happened on the medical end, this is an astonishing thing, and again, what I have to do is give people information. Back in March of 1993, the U.S. Army put out a medical directive. And this medical directive was, quote, the protocol for monitoring Gulf War veterans with embedded depleted uranium fragments. This is dated March of 1993. In this directive, they decided that to leave the uranium shrapnel in place in the soldiers. Do not remove it.
Now, why would they decide to do that?
Okay, the direct quote from this protocol is, quote, I want to read this directly because it's one of the most astonishing documents I've ever encountered in my life. Quote, the purpose is, again, now, the purpose is now, quote, quantification and documentation of the toxicological, that's the heavy metal toxicity, and the radiological cancer and tissue necrosis risk of embedded uranium fragments by, number one, measuring and documenting uranium levels in each soldier using in vivo and in vitro measurement techniques. Number two, determine the parameters and models needed to translate uranium levels in the body into estimates of increased cancer risk from exposure. Number three, comparing the clinical course of the body's response to depleted uranium fragments with that of other non-depleted uranium fragments to determine whether clinically significant differences exist due to either the chemical or radiological properties of depleted uranium. And four, determining the risk of chronic kidney toxicity due to long-term chronic exposure to elevated levels of uranium, end quote.
So what they're going to do is have another Tuskegee study, only this time on our soldiers. And for our listeners who do not know about Tuskegee, this was a scientific study. It started back, I think, about 1941, where they recruited some, maybe it was 1931, 19, it was actually 1931, they recruited 400 black men with syphilis. And they weren't recruited to be treated, they were recruited not to be treated, so they could find out what would happen to them with untreated syphilis. And they did everything they could over a period of 30 years to keep those men from being treated so they could autopsy them, chop them up, after they died and look at the tissues. And the most horrible thing was nothing was ever done to the doctors who were responsible for that. The program ended in 1971 when the public learned about it and there was a righteous indignation. Sounds like we're doing the same thing with our veterans today, doesn't it, Major?
Absolutely. And in fact, it absolutely has occurred. One of the individuals that was in a Bradley fighting vehicle that was shot by 220-millimeter DU rounds, the shrapnel was left in his body. Now, I personally went to his commander and set up his medical care in March of 1991, and he never received it. What happened, I guess we were in a meeting in Washington with the military, with government officials, the guy that actually wrote this directive up in Washington, D.C. The guy that wrote the directive was sitting between myself and Jerry Wheat, Sergeant Jerry Wheat. Jerry Wheat had his arm still in a sling. The sutures were still in his shoulder, where they had just removed the tumor surrounding the uranium shrapnel that had been left in his shoulder. When we're sitting there, and he looked at the Army doctor that wrote this directive and said, "Sir, what do you say about this? I mean, what are you going to do?" And the Army doctor looked at the sergeant and says, "Sergeant, you're going to have to prove that the tumor we just removed from your shoulder was caused by the uranium that was embedded in the tumor."
Well, I'll tell you what, we have immoral people, and when you have immoral people, you got real problems. We've got Rose on the line here. A question from a caller. He asked if U-238 is being used to make territories uninhabitable that have oil. Do you have any comment at all on that?
Well, when you contaminate the whole area with radioactive materials and other toxic industrial chemicals, you're sure not going to hardly be able to go in there, are you?
You're not going to be able to get the oil, so I wouldn't think they're doing that intentionally. They want the oil. Let's go to Rose again. Hi, Rose. Do you have another question or comment?
Yeah, it relates to the same thing. This carelessness of cleaning up and all. Are they trying to provoke and going into all these different countries? Are they trying to provoke an attack against America like they've done in the past with other countries?
Now, did you get the question, Major? In other words, are they trying to provoke the Arabs to the point where they will rationally attack America just to spite us?
I don't know, but
hold that,
can...
hold that thought for just a minute. Do you have the question and your response, Major?
Yes, it's very simple. You sit in the beautiful Monterey Bay area, correct?
Right, we do.
It's a gorgeous area. I love that lonesome tree that sits out there on the point.
Right.
On that drive. In that beautiful area there and down at Carmel on the beach where we have all had many a fine picnic, if a foreign nation was to come in there, takes tons and tons of radioactive materials and hazardous materials and contaminate that area, that beautiful area of America, what would the residents of your area do? What would the residents of where Rose lives do if their community was contaminated with radioactive materials and other toxic industrial chemicals? Does that answer your question?
The question is,
what would we do if it was done to us?
Rose, did you get the answer? And
I
think it's a very, very good answer.
Yes, and I would say it's not just the Arabs that we are riling up.
I think you're absolutely right. I think we're on the way to World War III. If you haven't seen our new video, Megiddo, the March to Armageddon, goes right along with this whole basic concept that we're talking about tonight. And we're doing everything we can to antagonize the rest of the world.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, fine.
Night.
Good night. Well, Major Rocky, we're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners tonight?
Yes, I do. And I'd like to close with this. I'm a warrior. And my friends are warriors that work on this. My dad's a World War II veteran. He fought in a lot of the major battles, and he named me after General Douglas MacArthur. Now, when General MacArthur came back and he gave his last and final speech, everybody has probably memorized this, old soldiers never die, they just fade away. Well, I can guarantee you, and the Pentagon is mad, because I'm one old soldier that's never going to fade away. Until all of our nation's sons and daughters, the warriors that have served our nation, defended our nation, receive the medical care that they've earned, receive the military education and training that they need to survive in combat, and that they're given the equipment, functional equipment they need to do their job if they have to defend our nation.
Well, I agree with you, and I applaud you for what you're doing, Major. We'll be talking to you again. Please try to get your friends to listen to our programs, to help us to get the word out, because you can't understand anything going on today unless you understand that behind the scenes are some very dark and sinister spiritual forces intent upon destroying this land. Why? Because it was once a Christian nation, because it once really truly was the land of the free and the home of the brave. Major Douglas Rocky, thank you so much for being with us. May the Lord be with you.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless America.
Amen to that. And we'll be back to wrap up this program in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you out there who listen to our programs will decide that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day as we reach out on through the miracle of satellite, radio, shortwave, internet. And, of course, as you know, we're here now 4 hours every day on shortwave. And your job out there is to tell people about our shortwave programs and get them to start listening. Of course, they can always listen on the Internet if they have a computer. And, of course, they go to radioliberty.com and pull down our programs. And then, of course, with the shortwave now, 5.745 megahertz from 3 to 5 Pacific and 8 to 10 Pacific. And we want people listening. And, of course, we can reach everybody on the West Coast with this who are not able to listen to our regular programs. Of course, we're going to be talking on our Saturday programs, which reaches the whole West Coast, and encouraging people to start listening to our programs on the shortwave. So, but once they understand the true spiritual nature of the battle, then they can begin explaining to others what's really going on. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our January newsletter, that goes into the background of the Illuminati. Was there really an Illuminati? Oh, yes. We quote James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, in a wonderful book he wrote all about the Illuminati. We'll tell you what George Washington said about the Illuminati, what Timothy Dwight, the president of Yale, said about the Illuminati, what the president of Harvard said about the Illuminati, what the members of the Illuminati said about themselves. A fascinating newsletter. That's the January newsletter. If you'd like a free copy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we hope you want to get the new video. It's called Megiddo, The March to Armageddon. And the video, so important, Diaprax in the Church and the takeover of the Christian Church here in the United States by a group that have a different agenda and are going to use the church to transform society. And that's what it's all about. A program based upon manipulation and corporate management being applied in the church to change our perception of God and of family and of country and of one another, and really of ourselves. So Diaprax in the church is so important, the video, Megiddo, The March to Armageddon, and of course my video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, or the book, the video, Iraq, The Untold Story. You need to understand what Iraq is all about, and you're not going to learn about it by listening to the newspaper, listening to the radio, or watching television, and certainly not by listening to Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly. So if you'd like to get any of the items I've mentioned, that is Iraq, The Untold Story, the video, the syllabus, Brotherhood of Darkness, the book, the video, the audio tape, Megiddo, The March to Armageddon, or Diaprax, the story of the church growth movement, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and they can certainly advise you what needs to be done. And then, of course, we ask you to tell others about our programs. Tell them about our website at RadioLiberty.com, where they can go and listen to our programs 5 hours a day and not get that much accomplished. But, of course, you get a lot of education, and you'll be able to verify what you're saying and learn how to go to others. Don't grab them by the lapel and try to force them to believe what you believe. Just ask them questions. Try to get them to think. Because what they've done is dumbed down the American people to the point where most of them can't think or think objectively. And then, of course, pray for America. Pray for revival. Because if we don't turn back as a nation to God, if you can think of any reason why God should ever again bless this nation, we ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. But we also ask you to pray for my ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so...